The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 534. I'm going to apologize in advance. You're going to hear some background noise. It's my air conditioner here in Columbus, Ohio on Tuesday. It is 91 degrees with a heat index that makes it like in the upper 90s. It's just really, really hot, and as much as I love doing this podcast, I'm not going to sit here in this office without AC on, so hopefully it's not going to be too distracting for you, because I have one heck of a guest stopping by for this episode. He is an independent comic book creator and publisher. He's worked in the industry for IDW for a number of years before branching out and creating his own company, which is called Funtime Go LLC. I'm talking about, of course, the man behind Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Funtime Go. I'm talking about David Hedgecock. I know that was a mouthful to say, but I had David on about 2 years ago to the very day when he was talking about his first issue of Super Kaiju. He's now got number 3 set to go. In fact, we talked quite a bit about issue 3 and basically how the Kickstarter is actually fully funded, but still all the different things that you could still get with that issue. We also talk about some of his other particular endeavors, such as a superhero comic called Sugar Bomb, Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians, and we even talk a little bit about how he's got a gig working on the Conan archives. And that's a pretty cool story. I'm not gonna waste any time. I'm going to thank some sponsors that we're going to get right into my conversation with David. So let's start off with sponsor number 1, Courtney 614 Deals. If you need great deals on women's fashion, health and beauty, and a plethora of other merchandise, look no further than Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her on all of those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc., etc. Simply just look for Courtney, spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, 614 Deals. And if you pick anything up from her shop, just let her know that you heard about her great endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. All right, and now it's time to talk about the old school sponsor, that of course being World's Greatest Comics. World's Greatest Comics has everything you need for your comic book fandom. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies, you name it, they got it. So you need to stop by the store, especially if you're in Central Ohio. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But you can also find them online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for at WGComics. I'd like to thank all of my sponsors for being supportive. I truly do appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear me and David Hedgecock talk about all of his projects, including Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Funtime Go. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening on this episode of the PVD Cast is the man behind a very unusual but fun book. It's called Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Fun Time Go. And the man behind that project is Mr. David Hedgecock. David, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me.
How is life out in San Diego?
It is the perfect time of year out here. We just hit the summer solstice a week or two ago, so the sun's out until like 7:30, 8 o'clock. and the beach is right down the street, so life is pretty grand.
And you're not having like the horrible temperatures we are out having here in the Midwest of like 90 plus degrees, are you?
No, nothing like that. Dear God, I would die. I don't even know what that temperature is. we get the heat in like late August and then into September now. It even goes into October sometimes now. It didn't used to be like that, but it seemed that's how it is now.
We're having some wild weird weather, if I may say so.
Yeah, wasn't it? There was some place where it was just flooding, and I was like, "Holy moly!"
Oh, every time I turn on the news, there's some catastrophe of either flooding or tornadoes or whatever. And I don't just like you. I don't remember that happening as a kid growing up.
No. It seems like it's worse now. But I don't know. Maybe we're more connected now, so we hear about every little thing. And when we were little, maybe we didn't hear as much. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Good point. Well, let's talk about Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Fun Time Go. I'm just going to, from here on out, call it Super Kaiju, if that's okay with you, David.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, can you give us a summary of the project?
So we just wrapped up our third Kickstarter, so it's our third book. And the book is the story of these sort of down-on-their-luck 20-something group of gals who... they sort of become acquaintances as they all belong to this roller derby team, an all girls roller derby team. So they kind of meet each other as members of the Diva Demons, the all girl roller derby team, and then they sort of become friends, like real close friends, because they decide to join form a sort of garage rock band called the Burnouts, and that's where they sort of become real friends. And so the story is sort of like, you know, just the struggles of being in your 20s and having talent, but really not having much else. And just trying to make life figure out life. And then what I do is I take a giant kaiju monster and I smash him into the middle of it. And then the fun begins.
Yeah, that's such a very easy way to describe that. I like that. You just take a kaiju and smash him in the middle of it. That's funny.
Yeah, it's wouldn't be much of a story if I didn't do something like that.
Yeah, right. So
I mean, maybe it would be a story, but it wouldn't be the story that I would write.
There you go. So you just mentioned you wrapped up the Kickstarter for issue number 3. How was the, obviously it was successful. How does that make you feel when you know that you can take a breath for a moment, that the Kickstarter's over? So are you one of those people that get a little bit anxious about that, the Kickstarter funding? Or
let
it be what it is?
Yeah, you can't put up that weird negative energy. Otherwise, you know, weird negative things start happening. So I don't know. Our Kickstarters are always well funded, and we work our tails off before the Kickstarter launches to make sure of that. You know, we do a lot of pre-marketing for all of our campaigns and really get things dialed in. We build really fun campaigns that have lots of amazing stretch goals, and we spend, you know, probably two or three times more money on just our stretch goals than, like, you know, the regular campaign. So at this point, you know, we've got a really cool and growing sort of hardcore audience that's following us across all our different books. Shout out to the Viper crew. And so we know those books are going to fund now. It's just a matter of just getting the work done, really. No, I treat the Kickstarter like a party, man. It's supposed to be a good time. Like, everybody that shows up and checks out a campaign, you know, I want you to be entertained even by the campaign itself. So we're trying to have a good time. And if I walked in the door with like this weird nervous energy and like hand-wringing energy, you know, even through the internet, I think people pick that stuff up. So I don't do that. I'm throwing a party. Everybody's invited. You know, comics are the biggest party on the planet. There's nobody is kicked out the door. All us nerds can go. And so that's what it is. We throw a little party and we have a good time. We do live stream events. We do all kinds of, like I said, we do a bunch of giveaways. We do cool stretch goals. And so no, I don't worry about it. It's the last thing on my mind.
One thing I'd like to mention about this Kickstarter, you said that you like to entertain people that are checking it out. I was very entertained by the music video that you had as one of the first things you saw on the Kickstarter. It had original music. It was really cool in terms of the graphic and the pacing of it. So who was in charge of creating that? Was that you, or was it you and some other folks, or was it something that you handed off to somebody else?
I put it all together, and then I hired a video editing team off of Fiverr to okay. Put it all together. But I selected the music, and it's an actual band. They're credited in the video, and we pay a license to use their music for that video. Yeah. So you know, the only thing that's a little frustrating with me about that video, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. It turned out great. And I showed it to all the artists who had art in the video because I wanted to make sure they were happy with it too. And everybody was to a person was happy with it. But I'm going to get up on my soapbox a little bit here. I'm really not an AI guy, like especially when it comes to the creative arts. I want humans to make stuff. And so I hired this video editing team to create this video for us. And I had worked with them in the past and on some of our other videos. And so they delivered the video and it looked great, but I suspect, and I don't know for sure, I suspect they used a little AI to like do some of the transitions. And it was too late for me to like go anywhere else. And I honestly didn't know if they did that. So I just let it go. I let it slide. But it sure did bring up some like questions in my gut about like, you know, okay, I really like this, but I paid someone to do the work and all the art that's presented in it, you know, are, you know, human beings that made the art. So where does that line get drawn? You know, how do you reconcile that? Because everything to all of it is basically a human endeavor, a human created endeavor, except there's these certain things where potentially, you know, some AI tools were used. And then, so is that okay? Like now, is it just a tool like Adobe Photoshop, or is it still verboten? You know, I don't know. So I'm glad you brought up that video. I really like it, but it did raise some questions for me that I'm still struggling with.
And I can also say that, you know, I struggle as well with using AI with podcasting. I use it, but usually I use it for things that I'm stuck on. For an example, I will freely admit I use it as a model for my summaries when I write up the summary of the episode. Sometimes if I get stuck, I'm like, I'll open up ChatGPT and throw in some things, but I don't lift it straight from there. I kind of tweak it and make it my own and use it that way. But I understand where you're coming from, because I think that for me, my biggest worry is there's not a lot of guardrails right now with AI, and that bothers me.
Yeah, you have to kind of create your own set of rules, I guess, and then just hope those, and then be flexible, you know, like just be willing to not be set in stone on whatever that looks like. But it certainly, you know, put up some question marks for me, like how do I engage with this new thing, and how do I use it as a tool? Or do I use it as a tool, you know? So what happens when it's not even me, and then when it's somebody that I hire to do it, right? Because if I hired an artist to draw, you know, a pinup for me, and then they just plugged it into AI and had AI create a pinup for me, and then maybe they went into Photoshop and adjusted some colors or something, I'm not cool with that, right? Like that's not okay with me. And if I found out that they did that, I wouldn't, you know, work with them again. And I certainly wouldn't put that pinup into my book. But, you know, where's the line? That's the clear and easy line, right? Like they didn't draw it. But where's that line you know, when it starts getting closer and closer to, oh, they just helped them create a rough, you know, and then they are the ones that went in and did all the actual line work and produced the line weights and did the, you know, added the filters and, you know, all the stuff that Photoshop does. And it just, it's tough. It's tough to figure out like where, when it gets, you know, into the minutiae, into the weeds of it, like what do you do? Something I think we're all going to be struggling with moving forward. Anyway, I didn't mean to turn this into a philosophical podcast about AI. let's get back to the comic books.
Okay. You know, the other thing I was going to mention with the Kickstarter campaign was I thought that you had a really cool perk in the Super Kaiju coin that you had. How did you come up with that idea?
Oh, you know, we've done coins for some challenge coins for a couple of our other campaigns. And Super Kaiju, that was the first time we even got close to doing a challenge coin for Super Kaiju. But we didn't get it. We didn't hit the last stretch goal. But we got everything underneath it. We ended up with six or seven stretch goals that we hit. So, I mean, there's tons of cool stuff that we get to make. We just didn't get to make the challenge coin. We've done those in the past. I've seen other campaigns do them. People seem to like them as, you know, cool little collectibles. And we found a really great source for making them. And they just do the folks that make the challenge coins for us do an incredible job. So yeah, it was just another cool thing. The stretch goals for me are more, well, everything, the stretch goals, the add-ons, the book itself, it's all just stuff that I want. and then I'm also, so I'm like, I'm rooting for us to get to the stretch goals, not because like it means more money, but because it means I get to make these cool things. So yeah, we didn't get to that one, but hopefully next time, I don't know, you know, it was our most successful Super Kaiju campaign. I think we did almost $19,000 on the campaign. And Super Kaiju is our probably lowest performing, book, but that was the best it's done so far, by like $1,000 or something like that. So I'm super happy with the results. And I'm really anxious to, the book's already done and we're going to the printer this week. So anxious to get everything done and get it out to people.
Well, one thing that I've kind of overlooked, this third installment of Super Kaiju has a kind of a subtitle that is Fuji Tengu Flames. Can you explain what that is, or would that be giving away too much of the plot of the book?
No, we can talk about that. So basically each book of in the first four books, so the first story arc is four books. And let me tell you a little bit about the book, because it's not a comic book. It's more of I call it a graphic novella. And each book is a hardcover, hardbound, you know, it's got a spine with a dust jacket and, you know, spot varnish and lay flat binding and super high quality premium paper interior stock, you know, lush, gorgeous in papers with art. And so it's not a comic, right? It's more of a graphic novella. And they're also like magazine size. They're not standard comic book size. So they're kind of like these larger magazine size. If you're familiar with like European, you know, graphic novels, the way European bidet, that's not the right word. Bidet is toilet. what is the French do it a lot more than anybody else. Anyway. They're sort of these high-end things, and so there's a lot more story. It's not just so you know one book is, you know, more like two and a half comic books, if you wanted to equate the two. So there's a lot more story. But anyway, back to the title. So each book has a title. It's separately titled, and the first story arc is the first four books, which is going to come out to, you know, over 200 pages of story, and each of the first four books in the first story arc is the subtitle. So Super Kaiju Rock and Roller Derby Fun Time Go is the name of the book. And then the subtitle is the monster, one of the kaiju that gets introduced in that book. So book one was Balam, and Balam was the first kaiju we met. Book two was Sequoia, and Sequoia was our redwood kaiju, literally is the redwood forest. Up near Yosemite. And then book three is Fuji Tengu, And Fuchi Tango is, oh, I'm sorry, book two was Sequoia Suite. I added, and the first one was Balam Rising. So the third one, Fuchi Tango Flames, Fuchi Tango is the kaiju that we meet in book three. And Fuchi Tango is revealed at the end of, well, spoilers, but at the end of book two. So if you know anything about Japanese folklore, and the island of Japan, you can figure out why it's named Fuchi Tango.
Well, let's talk about your lead artist, Rolando Maeda. Why was he the choice for the project?
Yeah, so I don't know if I told this story last time, but I'll tell it or tell it again, depending on where we're at. But Rolo is sort of the reason why I got back into comic books, into sort of like publishing comic books, I should say. So I was the former editor-in-chief and associate publisher for IDW Publishing, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Star Trek, and all those guys. And so I was there for 6 or 7 years. And then I left that company and I sort of went outside of comic books. I started doing stuff outside of comic books, publishing still, but not comic book publishing. I continued to consult for comic book publishing stuff and still kept my hand in a few things, but I was largely doing it for other people, for clients. And then sometime a couple of years ago, so I've known Rolo, the artist for Super Kaiju Rock and Roll Derby Fun Time Go. I've known Rolo for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. I've known him since I worked with him at the last company that I owned, Ape Entertainment. He was one of my artists for Kung Fu Panda and Shrek, and he did a book called Pocket Guy for me. So anyway, so I've known him forever. And all the time I was at IDW, I would reach out to him every once in a while, and I'd say, you know, hey, come over to IDW, come work for us. You know, I've got a cool project. I think you'd be perfect for it. And every time he'd be like, man, David, I'm too busy. I don't have time. I can't do it. I'm like, okay, well, you know, good for you. I'm glad you're busy. And so then a couple of years ago, so every time I did that, you know, years and years, I never once got him at IDW, even though I tried a lot. I tried several times because I'm just a huge fan of his art. I think he's an amazing talent. He's a triple threat. He can like do pencils, inks, colors. He can do anything, and he can do it at a super high level, like super, super high level. And he can do it. He's fast on top of it. So just like a rare breed of comic talent. You just don't. There's just not very many guys on the planet that can do what that guy can do at the level he can do it, as fast as he can do it. So anyway, a couple of years ago, he reached out to me and he sent me an email and he was like, hey, Dave, how's it going? I'm like, oh, it's good to hear from you. How you doing? He said, well, I'm doing good, but I'm sort of running. I'm light on work. Like I'm sort of needing some work. If you know anybody, you know, just, you know, put me in touch, would you? And I went, dude, you're hired. Like I will have a script for you tomorrow. Like, let's go. Now, John, did I have a script for him? No, I did not. But I figured it out, and that's kind of how Super Kaiju got started. Rolo needed work, and I was not about to let the opportunity to work with Rolo again go by. And so I sort of dusted off an old concept that I'd had laying around for years, and put it together. And that's what Super Kaiju was. Came out in the open, and then once I got the bug of, you know, sort of like producing stuff for myself again, then I was in trouble. Then I started, now I've got Super Kaiju and Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians and Sugar Bomb, and so now we've got three properties and I'm in it deep once again.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with David for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, you name it, they got it. So you need to stop by the store, especially if you are in Central Ohio. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @WGComics. I'm sure that you agree with me on this, that Rolo has a very unique style that fits really well, I think, with the narrative of Super Kaiju.
Yeah, the book is really his visually at this point, right? Like, I'm so it's interesting. When I was first coming into comic books, I came up from the art side. I was an artist. I drew comic books for a living for several years before I sort of migrated over to the business side of the comic book business. And so I never wrote, you know, scripts or anything. Like, I was an editor, though, and I was an editor-in-chief, and I owned comic book companies. I worked with big-time writers, so I know what a good script looks like, right? And I know what story, I know how to do story, tell story in comic book form and all that jazz, but I hadn't really written a lot of scripts. The only scripts I had written were scripts for me to draw, like my own draw. So writing a script for somebody else was kind of a new thing for me. And so I write a pretty detailed script, but at this point, you know, we're into book four. We're halfway done with book four because book three was already done before we started the Kickstarter campaign. And it's so much just Rolo's book, you know, it's so much Rolo's visuals. And I'm just sort of following his lead at this point. Like, you know, I see what he's into, and I'm just kind of writing and playing to his strengths at this point, just trying to give him stuff that I know he's going to crush. But yeah, visually it's 100% his book, and I wouldn't do the book without him at this point. We are committed. We fully committed to each other to complete the first four books. And so we're, like I said, we're probably 15 pages away from that being finished. And then I think we're going to, I know what the next story arc is. And so I think we just rolled on. I just need to sit down and say, do we want to do this again for another, you know, year and a half, 2 years? I hope he says yes. I want to do it. And I'm pretty sure we will, but we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here.
So where can folks get an issue of the number three book, the Fuji Tengu Flames? I know that the Kickstarter is over officially, but I assume that there's going to be some different avenues that you can get your hands on this book.
We're taking late pledges through BackerKit right now. If you just go to funtimego.com, no matter when you listen to this podcast, if you listen to it the next couple of weeks, you can just click the button at the top that says, you know, late pledges here. And it'll take you to the BackerKit, so you can pledge and pick something up, and you'll get all the stretch goals and stuff as well. So it's a good time to jump in, do a late pledge. And if it's, you know, if you're listening to this and it's been a couple months, just go to funtimego.com and the book will be available on our website. So as soon as we fulfill our orders to our Kickstarter pledgers, all our backers, then we make it available to people on the website.
Okay. And Funtime Go is your company, correct? That you have been successfully doing a lot of different projects, including the Conan archives. So that, correct? That is the name of your company?
Yeah. So the name of the company is Funtime Go. And it sort of just spun out of Super Kaiju Rock and Roll Derby. Funtime Go was first. And then we were getting so busy, and, you know, I brought a couple people on, and I was like, okay, well, this is a company now. So I incorporated, and instead of just being in sort of like a one-man operation, general partnership or general ownership, I incorporated, turned it into a company. I needed a company name. I was like, man, I don't know what to call this thing. And I was like, oh, I'll just use Funtime Go. It's a good name. I'll just use that. So Funtime Go, we are largely, our bread and butter is not the Kickstarter stuff or the comic books that we make. That's sort of certainly profitable, but it's just a small part of our business. The most of our business is our consulting business. So we consult, you know, I've been in the business for almost 20 years. I know everything inside and out about, you know, comic book publishing and how to make comic books. And I have a very good, I guess, Rolodex, for lack of a better term. But what do you call a Rolodex in 2026?
The contacts on your iPhone. That's what the equivalent. I mean,
it's not as sexy as Rolodex. So anyway, I know a lot of people. I've got a lot of friends, and so you know, people come to us. You know, if they want to make some stuff, make cool stuff, and make it good and make it on budget, they come to us and we help them do it. So one of our biggest clients, and I think our favorite client, is the folks that own Conan the Barbarian. And a couple of years ago, they brought us, brought my team on to handle the Conan the Barbarian comic book archive. So, you know, Conan's been published pretty much continuously for over 50 years now and across three different publishers. So it's a huge amount of, you know, assets. And all of the previous publishers have done, all of them did a good job of archiving and sort of preserving, you know, the assets that were, that they created, but it's still 50 years worth of stuff across three different publishers. And so it's not a bird's nest, but it you know, it's dangerously close to that. So we've gone in and we were hired to go in and sort of digitize the archive and make it all make sense and make it super clean. And then also figure out and put together all the different archival packages. So our team is responsible for creating the omnibus packages that are being published through Titan. And we're largely following, well, we are following pretty much exactly the what Marvel established with their last round of omnibus. And then we're doing a bunch of other stuff too. We're handling their Conan Reforged magazine, which is a bunch of reprints of sort of like major hit Conan hits, like some of the best and, from the Savage Sword of Conan, which is the black and white magazine. And we're coloring the material and then publishing it. A lot of it for the first time, in color for the first time. So we're doing stuff like that. We do a few other things here and there for that particular client. And then we've got a couple other clients that we do stuff for.
Okay, cool.
So that keeps us very busy.
You said it for sure. 50 years worth of archives. That's no small feat, my friend.
No, it's not. But, you know, it's so fun. It's just like, I mean, you know, going to work and checking out, you know, some Barry Windsor Smith, you know, art, you know, for a day, like having to scan Barry Windsor Smith art for, you know, for 8 hours is not a horrible way to spend an afternoon. So it's pretty great. It's remarkable. I've always been a fan of Conan the Barbarian. Like, I've always been a fan. Even back when I was a little, I don't think my parents really knew what Savage Sword of Conan really was. So I would get the magazine, you know. And even back when I was really young, I loved that magazine. I loved it so much.
Cool. Well, let's talk about another one of your projects. I think we mentioned it in passing, Sugar Bomb. Can you give a little summary of that project?
Yeah, Sugar Bomb's the first superhero book that we decided to try. All of our stuff is like, all the books that we make are superhero adjacent, right? Like, mm-hmm. Super Kaiju, Rock and Roll Derby, Fun Time Go. It's an action adventure piece, you know, with hot girls and giant monsters. Like, what fan of comic books in North America isn't going to be into that, right? And Miss Mina and the Midnight mm-hmm. Guardians is, you know, a steampunk horror action adventure book with hot girls and giant monsters. So, you know, again, like, and so Sugar Bomb though is straight up superheroes. So the thing about Sugar Bomb, it is kind of like a superhero sitcom, I guess is what I would call it. Like, we're definitely got our tongue firmly in cheek. We're not trying to take a piss, you know, on superhero stuff. Because I love superhero comic books. I grew up on them and I, you know, still read them today. But it's sort of like a sitcom. This action adventure version of superheroes is, you know, that market's being very well served. So we're sort of still trying to find a way to carve out a fun little niche within superhero genre. And I think we've done it with Sugar Bomb. So Sugar Bomb's about sci-fi sort of science hero. She's got mech pieces and parts, like armor, sort of like an Iron Man, but she's a lot less covered. And she's, you know, protecting a city against supervillains. And she's got a sidekick who's sort of like this mad genius dolphin who's also very horny. And that's sort of the setup. That's sort of what Sugarbomb is. And the story is really probably more about Tom the dolphin than it is about Sugarbomb right now, just because he's so dumb and hilarious and fun to write that the stories tend to revolve around him than they do around Sugarbomb. But I think that's okay, and our fans definitely know and enjoy it. So the first book that we put out was Sugarbomb Portal Potty, and in that story, Tom the dolphin invents a toilet that when you flush it, it just flushes the waste to an alternate dimension. So, you know, you don't need any plumbing. He asks Sugarbomb to come in so he can test it while she's watching. But really, he's just trying to do weird dolphin stuff. And he flushes it, and it the toilet sucks him into this an alternate dimension. And so Sugarbomb has to jump into the toilet and go after him. And it gets really weird from there. The thing about superhero books is that, you know, there's all these amazing superhero books being drawn by these super incredible, amazing talent, you know, at Marvel and DC Comics. So if you're going to, for me, the thing that's always sort of frustrated me about superhero comic books when people try them, and it's not Marvel and DC, is that they always have artists who, you know, aren't up to par, basically, right? Like they use artists who can't get work at Marvel and DC, and that's why they're working on, you know, other, you know, alternate superhero stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case, but, you know, largely that's sort of what it is. So when we sat down and decided to do superheroes, I said, well, we're not going to do this unless we get, like, not just like guys who work can work at Marvel DC, but let's get guys who, you know, Marvel and DC like working with and work with all the time, right? So that's what we did. So we got legendary artist Bart Sears. If you aren't familiar with Bart Sears' work, go look at Justice League Europe to start, and you're welcome. But Bart's been drawing superhero comics for 30 plus years. He's one of the best to ever do it. And so he came in and did a bunch of the design, original design work for us, and drew one of the first stories called Milk Run. And then Bart was a little waylaid with some other work. And so we said, well, you know, let's just have some fun. And I was talking to Juan Jose Rip, who is another just incredible artistic talent. He'd just gotten off a run of Wolverine over at Marvel. He'd just wrapped it up a few months before I started talking to him. And so we were talking, and he agreed to come on. And so Juan drew Portal Potty for us, and that was the first book that we put out. And that Kickstarter did pretty well for us. I'm pretty happy with it. And Juan is working on another book right now. Bart is working on another book right now. And we have another book in the can. So Sugarbomb is definitely something we're going to be doing for a while. The first book was, the Kickstarter campaign was successful, and we love doing it. So we're going to keep going for a while, see what happens.
Cool. And I think you already answered my next question, because I was going to ask about the status of Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians, but you just mentioned it's still ongoing, and do you have a new one coming out relatively soon?
Yeah. So book three, we're working on book four, and the book three Kickstarter we're going to launch in August. So as soon as Super Kaiju book three, as soon as we start fulfilling the orders on that campaign, we'll launch Miss Mina. The problem with Funtime Go right now is that we're making the books, we're actually making the books faster than we can make the Kickstarters. it's all the printing and the publishing and the order fulfillment that is really slowing us down. Which makes sense because, you know, I've been making comic books for years and years and years, but I always made it under the, you know, sort of the comic book shop direct market system of comic books, right? That's got a certain cadence and rhythm to it that, and it's also a lot less personal than a Kickstarter. So we've really struggled to deliver to our backers the white glove service that we want to provide and also do it fast enough that we can like get to the next book. So we're still struggling with that a little bit, but I refuse to not deliver white glove service to our customers. When they open the package, you know, you've pledged real money, you know, to these campaigns. I don't know if you're a Kickstarter guy, but I'm a huge Kickstarter guy. I've pledged to over 350 campaigns, and almost all of that is for physical comics, right? Mm-hmm. And I am often underwhelmed and frustrated by, you know, the book just kind of shows up in a mailer box and it's maybe in a bag and board. And that's it. There's just nothing. There's no personality to it. There's nothing. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that because I know and understand that, you know, doing a Kickstarter is hard. And if you've never published or printed a book before, you've got all of that to figure out too, right? But but I know all that part, right? So for me, it's just the fulfillment. It's just the packaging and making it look cool and presentable when you open your package. So I'm just focused supremely on that because I've got the rest of it kind of locked in. And I just want people to like feel really good about when they open up the box, you know, there's cool stuff inside and they're excited to, you know, to get a letter of, you know, a thank you letter that talks about all the stuff inside of it. And I often think about, remember when Apple, like first, the iPhone just first started getting like shipped out and it was in that, it's still in this cool white box, right? But the first time you saw that white box and you open it up and there's all the like, then you lift the, you know, that the packaging of the iPhone was such a treat, right? It was like part of the, this really cool experience. And they still do that, but it's, there's not as much stuff in the box anymore. They used to have like earbuds and other stuff and charging cords and things like that. But they still, the packaging is still cool, but it's, but we're all used to it now, right? But comic book fans are not. Comic book fans are used to being treated pretty poorly, I think. And I'm speaking as a comic book fan, right? Like it's not very often that we get treated nicely. Like we don't get nice things very often. So I want to make sure that we're giving nice things to our fans because comic book fans deserve it. And so we kind of go the extra mile to really make a cool package. It's like when you open it up, you see still cool. So you have cool things in your hand and you got a nice experience out of it. Even before you read the book, you've had a nice experience. So that takes time, that takes energy, that takes, you know, a certain amount of manpower and hours to get that, all that done right. And so it slows us down, We make the comic books faster than we actually get them into, get them printed and get them into people's hands.
All right, David, last question here, and then we're going to plug where folks can find you online and whatnot. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Corner Box Club. Can you tell the listeners what that is and what some of the topics are discussed on that particular project?
Yeah, man, I'm all over the place. I'm all over the map. I'm all over the comic book map, John. I like most other middle-aged white guys, I too have a podcast. it is a comic book podcast that I host with my good friend John Barber. So we've talked a little bit about my experience. You know, I've been in working professionally in the comic book industry, like making my living in comic books for almost 20 years. And so I've got all that, you know, kind of, so I'm bringing that to the podcast, but John Barber is even more, has even a better resume than me. John is a member of the Transformer Hall of Fame. And he got that designation by being the person who has written more Transformer comic books than anyone else on the planet, including Simon Furman. For those of you who think, who immediately thought, what about Simon Furman? Yes, he's written more than Simon Furman. And he's also a former Marvel editor. He's worked, like he was there when during the Joe Quesada era, when you know things were really super hot and they really started turning things on. over there. He was a Marvel editor for several years. And he was also a former editor-in-chief at IDW Publishing as well, editing and writing 10 years worth of Transformer comic books. So we get together every week and we chat about whatever. We interview people, other professionals, sometimes friends, sometimes people we just want to talk to. And we talk about just what's happening in the business, not only on the business side of it, like where sort of we have a little more insider knowledge, but also just about comics in general, and just generally loving on comic books. So I'm like, as an example, right now I'm reading the 2014 8-issue series from Dark Horse called The Star Wars, which is an imagining of the original rough script that George Lucas wrote for Star Wars. It was called The Star Wars. And Dark Horse did an 8-issue miniseries of it, and I'm reading it right now. It's fascinating. And so we're going to talk about that on the show, probably. Who knows? Maybe we won't. Sometimes I read stuff and then it doesn't get shown. But so we talk about comic books. We talk about the business of comic books, and we sort of give insider sort of info on the haps and craps.
All right. Well, David, let's start wrapping things up. Where can folks find you on social media, website? Do you have any appearances scheduled or anything for the next few days or weeks, I should say? Run it on down for us.
Yeah. So everything's at funtimego.com. If you go there, you can find our socials and follow us on there. If you want to follow me personally, just whatever social media you're on, just type in David Hedgecock. I'll probably come up. I'm the guy with the comic book stuff in my, in my feed. And let's see, appearances. We don't really do shows. We will be at San Diego, but mostly sort of at the hotel doing business stuff. I do have I'm doing a panel on Thursday, sort of a how to break into the industry panel, but honestly, I don't remember the details. It's being moderated by Denton Tipton, who is the publisher for, oh gosh, I just forgot the name of the company. Shoot. Anyway, there's going to be a whole bunch of cool people on the panel, and it's on Thursday at STCC, but I don't remember, and I think it's 5:00, but I don't remember any of the other details, so that's not helpful.
Well, you could go to SDCC's information page, and I'm sure you can find that information there, right?
Yeah. And I've already posted it on my social media accounts, and you can check there too. But anyway, it should be a fun one. There's some really cool people on the panel. But yeah, that's it. We don't do shows. We're strictly a Kickstarter is our primary and only source of distribution for our books outside of our website. So we just focus all of our energy and efforts there.
Sounds good. David, it's been a pleasure to chat with you again. I can't believe it's been a couple of years since we've sat down and conversed. But,
yeah, this blows my mind. If you'd asked me that before you told me, I would have said it's been, it was like about, 8 or 9 months ago that we talked.
Yep. I fell into the same quandary too. I was like, when was it the last time we talked? And I thought it was a lot sooner as well. I thought it was like within a year, and I'm like, nope, it's almost 2 years to the day. So, but
crazy.
Glad you're having success with Super Kaiju and all of your other projects. And thanks again for stopping by and chatting with me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And thanks for listening, everybody. I hope you had a good time, got something out of this, and hope you'll have me on again sometime, John. Thanks.
Absolutely. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with David Hedgecock talking about Super Kaiju, Rock and Roller Derby, Funtime Go, Sugar Bomb, Miss Mina and the Midnight Guardians, all of the cool things he's got going on. I really do appreciate David taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me.
And again, I hope that the air conditioning being on did not disrupt your listening pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. But anyways, with that being said, let's talk about where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. Well, the best place to get in touch with me is through either Facebook, Instagram, or Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. You can also find me over on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. If you want to be old school, you could shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about where they can hear the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that. First of all, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get every single new episode. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite outlet or app, go into the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you indeed use a great outlet or app to listen to the PVDcast, please rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and it lets those folks know that you are listening. And while you're at it, you might as well subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. And there's one third and final way that you can hear every single new episode, and that is on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can hear a live broadcast through the Facebook page, once again, @PVDcast. So there you go. You got three different ways to hear the show. PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.